As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Business of Sport podcast on The Athletic. Matt Slater is with us. Our guest today is John Varney, CEO and lifelong fan of Premier League side Brentford, who were promoted to English football's top flight this season after 74 years away. John, thanks for joining us today. Let's go through your career, first of all.
I've been chief exec of Brentford now for coming up, well, just on bang on 3 years now. Prior to joining Brentford, I was a partner at a business called Pitch International that look after the television rights for a number of sports organisations. Effectively, I set up their commercial division where I managed all of the Brazil national football team rights, all of New Zealand cricket rights, and brokered a number of sponsorship deals, both with Premier League football clubs, Gallagher's sponsorship of Premiership Rugby, West Indies cricket front of shirt deal. Prior to that, I was commercial director of Premiership Rugby for 8 years. Timing is everything in this world. And I got appointed commercial director of Premiership Rugby 3 weeks before Johnny Wilkinson hit a drop goal to win England the World Cup in 2003. And the game just exploded. So I had 8 fantastic years there. Oversaw broadcast rights, sponsorship rights. Prior to that, I worked in the world of agency land for a company called Octagon, managed the Heineken Cup Rugby, British and Irish Lions. Before that, I worked for Coca-Cola, the good old days of Euro 96 and the Coca-Cola Cups in England and Scotland, looked after the sponsorship of that. And then before that, I had my own agency with some other guys, and our chairman was actually Theo Perfitas of Dragon's Den fame. So yeah, I've worked in sport all my life. I was incredibly lucky how I got into it. I was born and bred in the Twickenham area. I had a job at Twickenham on a match day, anything from selling match programmes to doing the scoreboard in the good old days before they were electric. And then a job became available in the ticket office. I started off in the ticket office. Then a job became available in the marketing department, went into there. In about 1991, they built the North Stand. And they needed someone to sell the exec boxes in the North Stand. And I stuck my hand up and I said, I'll have a go at that. And there were 50 boxes and I managed to sell them all. That really put me on a pathway within the sports sponsorship world, where I got in contact, obviously, with some of the biggest UK entities. And I've been incredibly lucky and now chief exec of my boyhood club.
Did you think long and hard before taking over as CEO of Brentford because you were a fan?
Yeah, I did. I got approached by a headhunter and they said, would you be interested? And I said, no way. It's where I go at the weekend to get away from it all. And I quite enjoy standing on the sideline, shouting and, giving my 2 pence. And I thought, no, it's not for me. And then they said, look, read the brief. Because the one thing about this football club is, from a playing department perspective, it's incredibly well structured, got great ownership model, 2 fabulous directors of football, obviously very well known for our player trading and the development of our B team. The club was then going to go through a period of real transition from a commercial perspective of leaving Griffin Park and plans afoot to build a new stadium. The whole focus of the role was around the commercial development of the football club. And, you know, that is my sweet spot, Mark. That's an area that fascinated me, I was passionate about, and genuinely believed that Brentford could tell a very different story from a lot of other football clubs.
Do you function separately to your football department then? How much is there crossover? Given in mind, you've highlighted, you know, the directors of football and so on and so forth. Are you separate entities? Do you come together a lot? How do you function on a day-to-day basis?
We're a very tight group. We have a very active owner. We have a fabulous board. We've got a director of football that sits on that board. We're in constant communication. You know, you can't run two separate entities, you know, a football department and a the rest of the club. They are one. You know, one of our core values is togetherness. Absolutely. It's something you'll hear Thomas talk about after interview. We're a very, very tight group. So do I choose the players? Do I tell them how much they're going to spend? Absolutely not. That's down to the directors of football. Is it my job to help balance the books and make sure that we're thriving, not just surviving? Absolutely.
I want to start with the stadium. It was only, I think, a couple of weeks ago we had Gary Sweet from Luton Town on as chief exec talking about, you know, the move from Kenilworth Road and how that's been a plan for them since 1955. And of course, we're now talking a lot this last week or so about Chelsea and the difficulties they have around building a new stadium. How'd you do it? On time, on budget, in London?
On time, in budget, in London through COVID. Quite a feat from a lot of people. And listen, like all stadium developments, this was a long, long time in the planning. As I said, I've been a Brentford fan all my life. And, you know, there was talk 30, 40 years ago about new stadium, and there was a plan to take actually the ground out to the Western International Market by Heathrow Airport. And thank goodness we didn't do it, because, you know, we've managed to find the most incredibly tight but perfectly located piece of land, less than a mile from Griffin Park. No, it doesn't have the pub on every corner that it used to have, but it genuinely is still very much in the heart of the community. At heart, we are a community football club. So I'm just really, really grateful that the stadium is in the location that it is. It provides us with, I think, quite a unique platform to really communicate what we're about, because we're located not only in an area of huge commercial growth. You know, we've got the Golden Mile adjacent to the stadium. At one end, we've got Sky B's headquarters. At the other end, we've got Asahi's headquarters and everyone in between. But we're also, you know, bordering Hounslow, Ealing, boroughs, which are incredibly diverse. We've got the affluence of Richmond and Chiswick boroughs next door to us. So I don't think we could have selected a better place to lay down, our new home.
What's it done to the club? How's it changed you?
I don't think it's changed us massively. I've always said that when we were at Griffin Park, it's a stadium that I think was very dear to many, many football fans, not only Brentford fans. It was one of the last old school football stadiums. But for us as an organisation to grow our revenues, it was a handbrake. And to give it some context, at Griffin Park, we had what we called a Legends Lounge with 60 hospitality spaces. And that was the entirety of our hospitality at the ground. The new stadium, we've got hospitality facilities for 1,500 supporters and local businesses. So that is a massive, massive game changer for us in terms of revenue generating opportunities. But at its core, I think, you know, and I really hope that the match day experience at the new stadium is as good as the match day experience was at the old stadium. And, you know, and actually that's been borne out. We've just received the results of a Premier League fan survey where they were looking at match day experience and we were top. Now, listen, I totally get the reality of that it was, that survey took place at a point where we'd, you know, just beaten Arsenal. We were in the Premier League for the first time since 1974 and everyone was high-fiving each other and patting each other on the back. But genuinely, I do think we've worked incredibly hard, and as have the whole project team, to build a stadium that is still really close to the pitch. It puts fans at the foremost of everything that we're trying to do, you know, but it also has the bells and whistles that we need in order to grow the organisation. And we're never going to be able to drive the yield from a stadium that someone like a Man United can, or a City, or Arsenal, or Chelsea, because we're 17,500 seats. But, you know, the one thing that we can do is make sure that, you know, we can try and put ourselves in the best possible position to unlock broadcast value, which is absolutely integral.
On your fans and their fan experience, how much work did you do in moving fans from Griffin Park to your new stadium so that they were still with the people that they normally sit with? They were still at the relative right end for where they wanted to be. You know, so many clubs, and by the way, this, John, is not even if they change stadium. Some clubs just move sections around it. I mean, I won't say which club, but my dad is fuming at the moment that the family stand section that he sat near has been changed to the singing stand, because it completely changes the dynamic of a ground and the people who sit near. So how did you move those fans so that they were as because they are comfortable, as comfortable in the new stadium with their usual mate and family as they were in the old?
Yeah, the migration project was probably the most kind of intense and well thought through activity that I've been involved with since I've been at Brentford. It was all about getting the right people in the right place within the new stadium. Now, we had a massive advantage, Mark, which was we were the only football club in the top two flights of English football to still have a terrace. So everyone that was on the Ealing Road at the Griffin Park Stadium, we made it really clear to them that they should go into the West Stand, and by and large, they all moved into the West Stand. So, but to add a little complication, we've done that, and then now we've decided that we want to go to safe standing as well. So we're having to kind of go back to all of those people that moved into the West Stand. And we said to them when we did the migration, listen, if we're going to do safe standing, the first place we're going to do it is the West. But clearly we have got some people in the West Stand now that would rather sit down. So on our season ticket renewals that we're now doing for next season, we're doing another cut for them so that they can come out of the West Stand and go into the East Stand, which is the opposite end, or they can go onto the side. So yeah, look, stadiums are all about fans, not about the bricks and mortar. And it's about making sure that you've got the right people in the right areas. And by and large, I think we've achieved that. Now, listen, there's always going to be some problems, and our fans have been really tolerant and really patient with us. Because, you know, don't forget, they had the added frustration of not being able to say goodbye to Griffin Park, which was brutal. You know, let me tell you, for any football fan, a stadium that you've been in for over 100 years, not to say goodbye is horrific. And then they had the added frustration of watching us play in a brand new stadium for a season that they couldn't go and sit in.
One of the articles I read on you, a parent and child can watch Brentford for a season for 500 quid. I think is that right, roughly?
Yeah, I think it might be under that.
Okay.
I mean, we've just done our season ticket renewals, and of course you're not going to please all of the people all the time, but what we've done with our season ticket renewals is that we've effectively kept the price and frozen that price. But what we have done is we've taken away the discount that we previously offered for what we call early bird. But the kind of net result of that, Mark, is that we have more Band B season tickets than anything else. And for an adult, it is £24 a game for a Premier League match.
Okay, give me a which is very good value, very good value. So give me an idea of how much you need ticket revenue. Bearing in mind you've talked about the importance of broadcast deals, and I and Matt will hear the same. We hear so many times broadcast deals are so huge, commercial deals can be so huge that actually fans could go for free and it wouldn't make that much difference to Premier League clubs.
Match day income is important, but it's not the key driver for us as an organisation. You know, our business model is built around effectively broadcast. And obviously that's the biggest revenue stream that you leverage when you go into the Premier League. It's built around commercial partnerships. We work incredibly closely with our Community Sports Trust to make sure that the commercial partnerships that we offer are very purpose-driven, because we know that if we just go into a competition with some of our local rival football clubs based on exposure and eyeballs, we're going to come second, aren't we? So our point of difference has to be around the way that we create our partnerships to be very purpose-driven, and that's provided great dividends for us recently. So TV, partnerships, and of course, player trading historically has been incredibly important to us.
And I wanted to pick up on player trading. That was the one I had sort of underlined, and I was wondering if you were going to say it, and you have. Getting harder though, right? COVID's hit the market. I mean, obviously we know that, was it two summers ago, you saw Watkins and Benrahma. Big profit, not so many big sales since. Is that market coming back?
Well, the reason we didn't make any
you're going up, of course.
Sales since we got promoted, and our central income went from 7.5 million to north of 100 million. So funny enough, you don't have to trade as many players when you've got other revenue stream being unlocked. Player trading will always be important to us. Obviously, Premier League status means that the business model changes a little bit, because you're unlocking so much more value from your partnerships, from your broadcast revenues, and your match day income from hospitality as well. We recently published our accounts and we made a small loss last year, you know, and that included £12 million worth of bonuses that we had to pay out to players for promotion to the Premier League. And we did have the player trading. So we're very comfortable that we have what we believe is the right sustainable model for Brentford Football Club. You know, what's right for us isn't right for other football clubs. I don't think one size fits all. Genuinely, you know, we're in a pretty good place when it comes to kind of the economics of our organisation.
How would you quantify the saving you think you make on not having an academy? That decision to go B team, was that a sort of a... I mean, I know it's a very innovative and different way of doing it, and that point's a difference point you make. And it's definitely worked. But I wonder, was it a saving as well?
It wasn't driven by financial necessity. It was driven by challenging ourselves to see what model is out there or we could create that is actually going to find us a genuine pathway to develop young talent. And we were incredibly fortunate that we had, Rob Rowan, who sadly passed away, was leading that project. And you know, you only have to look at the players that have made that transition from B team into first team has been huge for us. And it's not just about, you know, making sure that transition is there for them on from going from B to first team, but it's about living and breathing that down at Jersey Road at our training ground. Clearly, we've got restrictions at the moment, have to keep people separate because of COVID and bubbles. But by and large, you'll see B team players mixing with first team players on a daily basis, eating with them, having their medical treatment with them together. Again, that togetherness is so important for us. And that does genuinely make a transition for a B team player into a first team player so much easier, because they're not scared of that environment. There isn't the kind of unknown. It's all there for them to see day in, day out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
When you're newly promoted to the Premier League and you haven't been in the Premier League before, what's the first oh shit moment for a CEO?
The first thing is you think, oh bugger, why couldn't we go up automatically? Why did we have to wait another 3 weeks and go up via the playoffs? So you literally, I think we got promoted on the 29th of May, and then, you know, we're
right the 30th of May off if you get promoted on the 29th. So right. Yeah.
Let me tell you, we did have the party of all parties. I have to say, there is just so much to get through, Mark. The leap is huge, and on all fronts. I think probably the one part of the organisation where the leap isn't so great is the playing department. Actually, it's easier for them. They've got less games to do, haven't they? But from us as an off-field entity, your requirements from media, when you're in the Championship, you're at best you're doing one press conference a week. We're doing 4 or 5 press conferences a week. To give it some context, we had to employ an extra additional 30 people in the off field, so that's now taken us to a staff of 92, and I still think we're probably about 40 light.
Wow.
Of the next Premier League club.
So you bring in another 30, and you're probably 40 light.
Yeah.
Given you have talked about being together,
yeah.
Given you have talked about this special relationship between you all within the football club, how, if at all, can you keep that same feeling around the place when you might be looking at doubling your off-field workforce in the space of 12 months?
It's all about everybody understanding what the core objectives are of the organisation. You know, and we're, like every business, we have a strategic plan. But what we try and do, Mark, is condense it down and really make it something that everybody can understand how they can impact and how they can make a difference. We've been good as a football club, really, since Matthew took over control of the football club. You know, his first phase of his investment and his strategy was really clear, which is I'm going to invest and find different ways to improve the playing department. And if I improve the playing department, we're going to climb the leagues. And if we climb the leagues, we're going to get more people interested in us, more people watching us, and therefore we're going to create more value. And then we've done that to a degree and not finished yet by any stretch. So the next phase is all about now the stadium development and how we can build an environment where we can start to organically grow our revenues. So
John, you mentioned earlier about being ready on Sundays for rugby games. And for our listeners who are all around the world who don't know, you know, you share your new wonderful home with London Irish. And of course, you have a long background in rugby. You've already referenced that you're quite keen to get safe standing in as soon as you can. Yep. How do you feel about alcohol pilot, you know, being football fans being able to drink during a game in sight of a pitch as they can when they're watching rugby.
I feel it's quite sad that, you know, you can go to a football game on a Saturday and you're treated differently to a fan that goes to watch a rugby game on a Sunday. There are reasons why those decisions were made. I would suggest that we just need to be constantly challenging that decision-making process and saying, might you see different behaviour if you treat people in a different manner. Look, for us, of course, commercially, it would be better bar takings, but ultimately, the thing that keeps me awake at night and the most important part of my job is to make sure that we get people in and out of that stadium safely. If our safety advisory group and our local police and other services feel that alcohol is still not right for football, then, you know, of course we have to listen to that. Intuitively, it doesn't feel quite right, does it, that you can be treated differently if you're a rugby fan to you are a football fan.
When you were at Premiership Rugby, were you ever frustrated by the Premier League's power and seemingly omnipresence? And now you're in football at a Premier League club. Do you ever take into account how other sports may suffer from the Premier League's constant presence in our life?
I didn't ever sit there feeling jealous about how successful the Premier League had become. I think my honest view is you should really analyse and look at the Premier League and learn from them, because they've done an incredible job, haven't they? You know, it's the most successful show on the planet, isn't it, from a commercial perspective? And I think, you know, rather than get wound up with jealousy, actually analyse it and say, right, well, look what they've done well, and how can we replicate that? How can we learn from their successes, but also learn from things that they haven't done so well? I'm sure the rugby listeners won't like me saying this, but, you know, when I worked in Premiership Rugby, when you're so ensconced in something, it becomes the be-all and end-all. But actually, it's not until you take a step out of that environment, and particularly club rugby, that you realise actually how underdeveloped it still is compared with football. You know, and I think rugby also has that added real challenge of there are so many layers to the onion. You know, you've got the, you know, you've got the Six Nations, then you've got the Autumn Internationals, then you've got the European competitions, then you've got your domestic competitions, and within one market you've got two domestic competitions and then a cup. So actually when you analyse rugby and the revenue that it generates, I think it does really quite well, but it's got so many mouths to feed. And when you're feeding that many mouths, people stay hungry. And I think that's its real challenge. I think, you know, until they get to kind of the, you know, and also just some of the real challenges around how can you have club rugby weekends going on the same weekend as international rugby? You're creating clutter in your own marketplace, and you know that can't be good for the narrative, can it?
One other on that, which I'm sure you will have had many discussions in your time at Premiership Rugby on the advantages and disadvantages of promotion and relegation. And actually, you are now you're at a football club that has been promoted and is benefiting from promotion. You know, promotion and relegation is very important within football because of the pyramid structure. What strikes me as quite interesting, and rugby fans may hate me for this as well, but I actually think not having relegation has made the Premiership a much better product at the moment. I mean, it seems to be very difficult to call who beats who on any weekend. We take promotion and relegation as a core of British sport, whereas in many ways, it's probably just a core of British football, isn't it?
I think you can definitely say that if you take the jeopardy of relegation out of rugby, which they've currently done in the Premiership, then there is no question that the games look more free-flowing. People are playing, you know, without those concerns of being relegated. You know, there's no question that, you know, it had become quite attritional for the game for a number of clubs. You know, when you've got that dire consequence of relegation, personally, as a sports fan, I think you need jeopardy in sport. And you know, I think one of the great aspects of sport in this country is that there is that pyramid, that, you know, and Brentford are the prime example of that, aren't they? If you believe in your project and you've got good strategy, you surround yourself with good people and you execute your plan, you can reach the land of milk and honey. And we've done that. And, you know, I think to take that away from any sports organisation, I think is really difficult.
Has Christian Eriksen, the rival of Christian Eriksen, has that relaxed you?
I don't think it's about relaxing anyone. That Christian was a, you know, it was a football decision to bring Christian in, nothing to do with, you know, any his commercial impact. You know, and I think it was the perfect timing for both parties, wasn't it? Added to that, the fact that Thomas had coached him at junior international level and there was a relationship there. The fact that he'd also got some of his Danish teammates around him at Brentford. The fact that we're London and his family had lived in London, you know, it was just right place, right time, good for both parties. And we're absolutely delighted to have him. And, you know, and wasn't it just fantastic to see him play 90 minutes against Norwich on the weekend and come up with an assist? The hope is he's going to get stronger and better and he's going to have a fantastic time with us at Brentford.
You mentioned the Danish link with Midtjylland. How important is that? Because that multi-club model is something that we talk a lot about on this show. It's very, very trendy at the moment. Once again, you and your owner, Matthew Benham, you've been innovative. You were pioneers in many ways.
It can only be beneficial, can't it? Because you can learn from each other. You can share experiences. You know, there hasn't been a huge amount of kind of player trading between the two. You know, they are ultimately have one owner, but they are run as two quite separate clubs. And Denmark in itself has become a really important territory for us. You know, again, we talked about, you know, if we try and go into direct competition with some of our clubs around us and who are trying to break into the North American market or into the Asian market, and, you know, we're just going to come second, aren't we? But, you know, we have a unique opportunity to really hit Denmark and the Scandinavian markets. So, you know, absolutely, you know, from us, that there is a real commercial opportunity. And look, and of course, when Christian signed and we allocated his number 21, we didn't do too badly on replica shirt sales. I think we did 30 times what we've ever done before in the month of January. So,
wow. And those shirts will still remain valid next season, won't they? Because are you the only club on a two-year shirt cycle in the Premier League?
I don't know. Well,
you're unusual. You're unusual, John, because most of them are changed. Home, away and thirds are changed every year now.
I think there were a number of reasons why it was a good time for us to do it. And you know, first and foremost, you know, that shirt will always hold a special place in the heart of Brentford fans, because it was the shirt that we ran out and played Arsenal in the opening game of our first season back in the Premier League for 74 years. We are clearly on a journey from a sustainability perspective. We have a great deal of focus in and around our equality, diversity and inclusion and our wellbeing piece. But we probably haven't given sustainability the focus it deserves. And obviously rolling over a kit can only be a good thing from a sustainability perspective. And it's just a very, very small step in the right direction. And absolutely a key focus for me over the next coming months really is to develop a really meaningful sustainability strategy that we can launch for the start of next season.
And on doing the right thing, and this comes off the back of diversity and inclusion and sustainability, and this also comes back to your role at Pitch as well. Do you sense that there are going to be real shifts in the broadcasting market and the territories that will be considered to sell rights in now, as we've already seen the Premier League saying their games aren't going to be shown in Russia, do you sense a more ethical, maybe, view about where rights are sold to?
It's really interesting now to see for the first time the kind of international revenues match the domestic revenues, or gone slightly over, I believe, for Premier League. I still think the domestic market is still absolutely critical from an exposure perspective, but also from that revenue perspective. You know, I absolutely support the Premier League's decision in terms of halting their rights into Russia. I think that was the right and proper thing to do at this moment in time. But, you know, the Premier League is a global phenomenon now, isn't it? And every single market seems to have an insatiable appetite for Premier League content. So, you know, I think it's something that you clearly we need to monitor and make sure that the Premier League is being shown in the markets that we're happy for it to be shown in. But, you know, I think that's the same with every single rights holder across the planet.
Are you more in control of your message when you're one of 72 and the attention isn't on you and you can focus on your own stuff? Is it harder to be true to your values as part of a Premier League behemoth?
No, I don't think so. I think you can control your own controllables, can't you? And ultimately, you've got to be true to yourselves and true to the kind of values of this football club, which is togetherness, respectful and progressive. They're our core values. And as long as we live and die by those, all that really happens is that the Premier League helps us amplify that across the planet, doesn't it? Both in our own domestic market and internationally. You know, I don't think we don't try and be too clever about it. Just stick to your values. You know, I think, you know, we had huge plaudits, didn't we, after the Arsenal game? You know, it was, what an occasion that was. You know, the first time fans were back in the stadium since with COVID. You know, we first time in the Premier League for 74 years, a football club that had climbed the pyramid and beaten one of the country's elite. Thomas with our young Woody, our fan, at the end of the game. None of that was staged. That was all because they're our beliefs, they're our values. And I think as long as we stay true to that, then the Premier League gives us a great opportunity to amplify it.
Well, it seems a very, very appropriate place to leave it. So can we get you on again next to talk West Indies cricket, New Zealand cricket, some Twickenham and more rugby union stuff? Is that fair enough?
How to operate a manual scoreboard. Indeed. At Twickenham.
Yeah. I've got a suggestion as well. I don't know if it'll do as well as your Christian Eriksen shirt, but I've just noticed your lovely blinds that have got the bees on them.
Yeah. Yeah,
they do. I'm sure Brentford fans would love those in their kitchen.
Oh, look, there's another commercial opportunity.
Right, that's it. You can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/footballpod. Thanks for listening.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.